Chapter 75. The Italian officers' uniforms are very much the most beautiful I have ever seen, and, as a general thing, the men in them were as handsome as the clothes. They were not large men, but they had fine forms, fine features, rich olive complexions, and lustrous black eyes. For several weeks I had been culling all the information I could about Italy, from tourists. The tourists were all agreed upon one thing: one must expect to be cheated at every turn by the Italians. I took an evening walk in Turin, and presently came across a little Punch and Judy show in one of the great squares. 12 or 15 people constituted the audience. This miniature theater was not much bigger than a man's coffin stood on end. The upper part was open, and displayed a tinseled parlor. A good-sized handkerchief would have answered for a drop curtain. The footlights consisted of a couple of candle ends an inch long. Various mannequins the size of dolls appeared on the stage, and made long speeches at each other, gesticulating a good deal, and they generally had a fight before they got through. They were worked by strings from above, and the illusion was not perfect, for one saw, not only the strings, but the brawny hand that manipulated them, and the actors and actresses all talked in the same voice too. The audience stood in front of the theater, and seemed to enjoy the performance heartily. When the play was done, a youth in his shirt sleeves started around with a small copper saucer to make a collection. I did not know how much to put in, but thought I would be guided by my predecessors. Unluckily, I only had two of these, and they did not help me much, because they did not put in anything. I had no Italian money, so I put in a small Swiss coin worth about 10 cents. The youth finished his collection trip, and emptied the result on the stage. He had some very animated talk with the concealed manager, then he came working his way through the little crowd seeking me, I thought. I had a mind to slip away, but concluded I wouldn't. I would stand my ground, and confront the villainy, whatever it was. The youth stood before me, and held up that Swiss coin, sure enough, and said something. I did not understand him, but I judged he was requiring Italian money of me. The crowd gathered close, to listen. I was irritated, and said, in English, "Of course. I know it's Swiss, but he will take that or none. I haven't any other." He tried to put the coin in my hand, and spoke again. I drew my hand away, and said, "No, sir. I know all about you people. You can't play any of your fraudful tricks on me. If there is a discount on that coin, I am sorry, but I am not going to make it good. I noticed that some of the audience didn't pay you anything at all. You let them go, without a word, but you come after me, because you think I'm a stranger, and will put up with an extortion, rather than have a scene. But you are mistaken this time. You will take that Swiss money or none." The youth stood there with the coin in his fingers, nonplussed and bewildered. Of course he had not understood a word. An English-speaking Italian spoke up now, and said, "You are misunderstanding the boy. He does not mean any harm. He did not suppose you gave him so much money purposely, so he hurried back to return you the coin lest you might get away before you discovered your mistake. Take it, and give him a penny that will make everything smooth again." I probably blushed then, for there was occasion. Through the interpreter I begged the boy's pardon, but I nobly refused to take back the 10 cents. I said I was accustomed to squandering large sums in that way. It was the kind of person I was. Then I retired to make a note to the effect that in Italy persons connected with the drama do not cheat. The episode with the showman reminds me of a dark chapter in my history. I once robbed an aged and blind beggar woman of $4 in a church. It happened this way. When I was out with the Innocents abroad, the ship stopped in the Russian port of Odessa and I went ashore, with others, to view the town. I got separated from the rest, and wandered about alone, until late in the afternoon, when I entered a Greek church, to see what it was like. When I was ready to leave, I observed two wrinkled old women standing stiffly upright against the inner wall, near the door, with their brown palms open to receive alms. I contributed to the nearer one, and passed out. I had gone 50 yards, perhaps, when it occurred to me that I must remain ashore all night, as I had heard that the ship's business would carry her away at 4 o'clock, and keep her away until morning. It was a little after four now. I had come ashore with only 2 pieces of money, both about the same size, but differing largely in value. One was a French gold piece worth $4, the other a Turkish coin worth 2 cents and a half. With a sudden and horrified misgiving, I put my hand in my pocket now, and sure enough, I fetched out that Turkish penny. Here was a situation. A hotel would require pay in advance. I must walk the street all night, and perhaps be arrested as a suspicious character. There was but one way out of the difficulty. I flew back to the church, and softly entered. There stood the old woman yet, and in the palm of the nearest one still lay my gold piece. I was grateful. I crept close, feeling unspeakably mean. I got my Turkish penny ready, and was extending a trembling hand to make the nefarious exchange, when I heard a cough behind me. I jumped back, as if I had been accused, and stood quaking, while a worshipper entered and passed up the aisle. I was there a year trying to steal that money. That is, it seemed a year, though, of course, it must have been much less. The worshippers went and came. There were hardly ever 3 in the church at once, but there was always one or more. Every time I tried to commit my crime, somebody came in or somebody started out, and I was prevented. But at last my opportunity came. For one moment there was nobody in the church, but the 2 beggar women and me. I whipped the gold piece out of the poor old pauper's palm, and dropped my Turkish penny in its place. Poor old thing, she murmured her thanks. They smote me to the heart. Then I sped away in a guilty hurry, and even when I was a mile from the church I was still glancing back, every moment, to see if I was being pursued. That experience has been of priceless value and benefit to me, for I resolved then that as long as I lived I would never again rob a blind beggar woman in a church, and I have always kept my word. The most permanent lessons in morals are those which come not of booky teaching, but of experience. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.